session number 26542, Reel 1.
Stan Hancock's Reel 1. Can I ask you where you were born and when that was?
I was born in Acton, at London, Westray, on the 4th of May 1925.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family background?
Well, all I can say is that my father was born in Warwickshire and my mother was born in Staffordshire, and my maternal grandfather was a foreman cooper, and my paternal grandfather, my maternal grandfather was a carpenter, master carpenter, but my father himself was a clerk. I have no conscious recollection of either of my grandparents, because they both died when I was very young. In fact, my maternal grandfather died long before I was ever born. I was one of four children. I had two older brothers and a younger sister. And we had a fairly nice upbringing. We were poor. We weren't on the breadline, but we weren't rich either. Went to the local elementary school. I can also remember that it was a thing in those days, you had to go to church twice. Go to church Sunday morning with the family, and then Sunday afternoons you had to go to Sunday school. And there was always a thing in our family, and I think it was general really in those days, because I'm talking over 70 years ago, Great Britain, the Empire, and the motto, fear God and honour the King. And we had to grow up with that being impressed on us. Fear God, honour the King. I suppose that's what we did. We feared God and we honoured the King. We had a lot of fun though. And I can remember going to school, having to walk to school 3 or 4 miles a day. And in those days, there was no such thing as the Western Avenue, or the A40 is now called. It was just a track, farm track, Gypsy Corner. We used to cross a farm to go to school, and of course on the way back. Now I drive down there, and it's all built up. It's not very pleasant, factories and traffic. But anyway, in those days, that's what it was like. It was very pleasant. There weren't too many cars about. It was all horse and car, and I can remember too the first trolley buses coming through, going from, I think they used to go from Finchley to Hammersmith, and they replaced the trams. And I can also remember my mum taking my younger sister and I shopping, and she said, "We'll catch a trolley bus today. It's the first one come through, and it's just like riding on a boat." And it was true, you got onto a trolley bus, and there was none of the grinding and things that went with the tram. It was just a smooth, nice journey. So that was the sort of growing up period.
Do you remember much about your schooling?
Well, yes, I can remember the schooling because there was a girls' entrance and a boys' entrance. And we used to have to line up in our age groups, if you like. And then the teachers would come and they would lead us from the playground into the school, into the assembly hall. Girls would be, we were facing the stage where the headmaster and the teachers were. On the right hand side were all the girls, and on the left hand side were all the boys. We were segregated. But even though that after we'd had assembly and we'd said prayers and sung a hymn, we went to mixed classes. And we had, in those days anyway, we had one teacher that taught us everything. We had the usual Empire Day thing, May the 24th, which was Queen Victoria's birthday, which I remember was called Empire Day. And we used to gather in the playground around the flagpole with the Union flag flying, and we would sing the national anthem. And those of us that were in youth organisations like the Cubs, etc., we were allowed to wear our uniforms, our Cub uniform, because I had joined the Cubs and my sister was in the Brownies. And so, May the 24th, we would all get dressed up And I can remember that on two or three occasions we would have, I suppose, you would call it hooliganism these days, but those of us who won't come back, because we had a different scarf to the other, you might have four or five different cup packs, and you would start teasing, if you like, and eventually end up with fisticuffs, and the teachers would come and separate you from one thing or another. But it was all, I suppose, in good fun, really, afterwards. I enjoyed school. There was quite a bit of discipline there, because the teachers weren't backward in using the cane if you stepped out of line. And you didn't say anything to your parents when you got home, because more often than not, if you said you got the cane for something, your father or your mother would then give you another slap on the bottom. You know, you asked for it. You know, there was none of this business about I'm going up to complain. That's it, you wouldn't have got punished if you hadn't deserved it. So there you are. Take your punishment, and that was it. And then we used to have to, obviously afterwards, you know, we'd had this 3 or 4 mile walk back home to tea and one thing or another. But my two elder brothers, they were 5 and 6 years older than I was, and my sister, and they'd already been through this elementary school system. And because they hadn't passed any examinations, they left at 14. In those days, you had to leave school at 14, and they both got jobs. I was very fortunate because I passed a scholarship to what they called the county schools in those days, and I went to Acton County School. But I could cycle then. By that time, I'd had a bike, and we could cycle. Providing you got a cycle pass, you could cycle to school, and that was it. You started learning algebra and German, because that was the main language in those days. First form was always had to learn German, and then when you went into the second form, you could opt for either Latin or French. But German was the main language that was taught in those days. I quite enjoyed learning German. I wasn't very good at it, but later on I'll explain something about the German that I learned at school. As I say, then of course the war came.
Before you get to that point, can I just ask you a little bit more about your childhood?
Yes.
You mentioned Sunday school and you mentioned being a member of the Scouts,
yes,
or the Cubs. What other hobbies did you have?
Hobbies?
Or pastimes?
Well, we used to play football and cricket up at in the park, you know, during holidays and things like that. But we used to make balsa models of aeroplanes and things like that. We didn't have a lot of money in the house, so of course these sort of things, they were our birthday and Christmas presents, or aunts and uncles would, you know, give you a birthday or Christmas present of a model kit to make up. See, we didn't have anything like they had later on when my own two sons were growing up, you know, the plastic kits making aeroplanes and tanks and things, so they weren't around at all. But my middle brother, Leslie, he was very clever with his hands, and he used to do a lot of fretwork and make all sorts of things out of plywood and glue and things, but I never had the talent for that. So I would, you know, you would probably get a penny pocket money and you'd go around to the local hardware shop and you'd buy, what did they call them, a lathe, an inch lathe. And it was about, I don't know, 5 foot perhaps long. And out of that, we would make swords. And, you know, we'd make a handle and we'd sandpaper it and do all sorts of things and go out and pretend we were knights and have sword fights and things like that. And, you know, we used to live in a fantasy world, really. I can remember that I always thought I'd like to be a cavalier, fighting for King Charles against Cromwell, because it was fear God honour the king, you see. And the cowboys and Indians we used to play and hide in bushes and climb trees and things, which I'm afraid these days children aren't allowed to do. Well, I suppose they are allowed to do it, but they can't do it with the freedom that we had. If you fell out of a tree and broke your arm, it was hard luck. You just got it plastered up and it got better eventually. But nobody grumbled too much about it. So, you know, they were the sort of hobbies and pastimes that we did as youngsters. I can remember one when we were in the Cubs. The Jubilee of King George V. We had to put on a show in Gunnersbury Park to celebrate the Silver Jubilee of King George V. And the pack that I belonged to, the Sixth Acton, because we were the host pack where everything was organised from, I was given the role of being Robin Hood, because we did a little sketch about Robin Hood and Maid Marian. And my mother had to make me a Robin Hood outfit in Lincoln Green, and my dad made me a bow. And he said he would make another sword for me because he thought the one I had was a bit dodgy. We had this little tableau, if you like, or play in Gunnersbury Park with Robin Hood and his merry men and Maid Marian. And it was a lot of fun. And I can remember that it probably was the first time I'd ever slept under canvas, because we had to go down there on Saturday, and we stayed there the Saturday night. The first time I slept under a tent. I suppose I was excited about it, but later on when I joined the scout movement and became a leader, I wasn't really keen on camping at all. So again, you see, the fear God, honour the king, and the background of empire, and being British English, with, you know, celebrating King George's Jubilee, 25 years on the throne. This was also impressed on me, and other, you know, people of my generation. That's about all I can think about in the Cubs. You know, you got your badges for doing this and for doing that. And I can too also remember that when we used to have to go to Cubs, we'd get tuppence, which was the bus fare to go from where I lived, and a friend of mine, he was also in the pack, we'd get tuppence each and we'd have to go down on the bus. And we thought, well, if we walked, see, we could buy some sweets or something, you know. Well, this is what we used to do. We used to, I suppose, it was being conning our parents into the tuppence for the bus fare, when in fact we didn't use the bus at all. We would walk there and walk back. A lot of children do that. Well, I don't know about children doing it today. I'm out of touch with children today. But
what about at home? What sort of home did you live in?
Lived in the house I was born in. Was at Balfour Road, Acton, and it was built just after the end of the First World War, and it was the normal three up, two down, and it was an end terrace, number one, and my mother and father had the front room as the bedroom, and with my three brothers, or at least with three of us, I had the back bedroom and the little box room that, of course, my sister had. And we had the two downstairs rooms and the kitchen. But, of course, in those days, the back room was always called the best room, and we weren't allowed in that until Sunday. And nobody was allowed in the back room, unless it was a Sunday. And then we used to have to get dressed in our Sunday best. And we would be allowed into the back room, and Mum would put a tablecloth on the table, which was crocheted and all that. And it was quite a function to have afternoon tea in the best room. And there was a fire. If it was winter, they used to light the fire in the grate, and the no time for eating at all. And that was it. Otherwise, everything was done in the front room. We used to come downstairs in the morning, and by which time my mother would have had the fire going in the grate, and she would have heated up the water, so we had a little bowl of hot water to wash ourselves with, because we didn't have any hot and cold running water, we had cold running water. But I can remember, I think it would have been about 1938, something like that, just before the war anyway, when my father had a boiler installed, which gave us hot water, but not central heating. But we could turn on the tap and have hot water. Because prior to that, Saturday nights, we have a huge geyser in the bathroom, gas geyser, which my father used to light up, and then he would heat all the water, and all the four of us would all get into the, well, they would fill up the bath with hot water, and my two brothers would go in first, and then after that I'd go in, and my sister would go in last, and we'd all share the same bath water once a week. It seemed all very archaic these days, but that's how it was. And we were more fortunate than a lot of people in that we lived in this, what in those days was a very nice house, and you were sort of upmarket. So, and I think it cost my father anyway, didn't have a lot of money, but that was it. He provided us with somewhere decent to live. And we lived in North Acton, as opposed to South Acton, where, so the story goes anyway, all the rough people used to live, you know, whose fathers were coal miners, coalmen, and labourers, and that sort of thing. There was a social gap, if you like. Even though we were all working class, there was this big social gap. And it was carried on in the schools too, because if your father was, if you like, a white collar worker, you were seen as something superior to somebody whose father was a labourer or used to be a bus conductor or something like that. Yes, we knew our place and we always kept to it. So that's the sort of background I had with the family. Yeah, as I say, it was church Sunday mornings in your best, and then Sunday school in the afternoon. And occasionally we might all have to go to church Sunday evenings as well. It was all Church of England. But that was accepted. You know, nobody argued about it. You know, and in many cases you look forward to it, because you were only allowed to get into your best clothes on a Sunday anyway, and it was nice to dress up. So that's all I can, I suppose other things will come to mind later on. But there were, you know, I had a happy childhood, I suppose, even though, as I said much earlier, if you stepped out of line, you got punished for it. And I can remember, as a youngster, I must have been about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. They were building some new houses on an estate. And my father said to me, "Now, don't you ever go on the building site." Well, you know, you don't take much attention. Your friend, you played, and we played on this building site. And I can remember we built a wall with some bricks, and we put a plank across it. We were fighting on this plank, and I fell off, and I dislocated my arm. And I can remember walking home with the arm, and my father taking me down to the hospital, cottage hospital. No doctor. And then they bound my arm, and that was it. And I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks later, I was fit. They took the plaster off, and my arm was okay. And I can remember my father then saying, "Right, I told you mustn't go on that building site." He said, "You went there," he said, "or you broke your arm." He said, "But it's better now." He said, "So I'm going to thrash you now," he said, "because doing what you shouldn't have done." So he thrashed me. I thought that was a bit off, but anyway, that's what he did. It wasn't vicious, but he was just disciplined, I suppose it was. And that was it.
What did he use? What did he use?
What did he use? Oh, no, he just used a cane. You know, whacked across my bottom.
Can you remember any childhood illnesses or...?
Well, I can't remember them, but I know from what my mother used to say, I had measles, I had chicken pox, and I had mumps. And of all those, I can only remember the mumps, with this great big swelling either side of my... and feeling very ill. But that's the only conscious recollection I've had. I've got no recollection of measles or chicken pox. But I believe they were, you know, they were standard things in those days that children had. Because both my brothers had measles and chicken pox. Mary, my sister, she had measles and chicken pox and mumps. And I can also remember... I don't remember it, but I can remember my mother talking about my eldest brother, Dennis, having scarlet fever. And that was something terrible in those days. But, we recovered. I know that if ever you called out the doctor, which wasn't often, it cost my father 2 and 6 months for the doctor to come and see him. So the doctor didn't come and see us all that often, because I had a lot of money. So they're the only recollections I have of illnesses, and of course this broken arm that I have. We have the usual cuts and bruises when you fell out of trees and tripped over curbs and all this. And if you started roller skating, because I never had a pair of roller skates. I used to borrow friends, they were very kind, they said, well, you can borrow ours, and you slip over and you graze your knee or your shin, and you go home and mum would wash it and put this iodine on and a plaster on her, and that was it. I suppose those all hard knocks, you accept it as a kid growing up, because you know, you got involved in fights at school and you go home with a bloody nose or back up or something. And nobody bothered too much, except your mother would say, or your father might say, when he comes home from work, they'd say, well, you've been in trouble, what's it all about? And you would, oh, well, that's okay, as long as you stuck up for yourself. You know, whether you're lost or not, the fact is that you stuck up for yourself, or you stuck up for your sister. Of course, Mary was 12, she was a year younger than I was. And Dennis, that's my eldest brother, he used to look after Mary, keep an eye on Mary, to make sure that she wasn't hassled or anything like that by other lads at school.
You were 14 when the Second World War broke out.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember anything about the run-up to war? How aware were you that war was imminent?
I wasn't aware at all of the run-up to war. I can remember being interested in the newspapers, and I used to cut out maps. Initially, when Italy invaded Abyssinia, and I can remember my father saying, well, the League of Nations ought to do something about it, but they didn't. But I was interested in the fighting, most boys were. And then of course, the Spanish Civil War came along. And that was a bit nearer home, but I hadn't realised it at the time. And then we saw pictures in the newspapers of the Spanish people. And the Germans and the Italians sending troops to help General Franco. I knew it was all going on, but I didn't realise that... The political reasons behind it. People were just fighting, that's all. Because my father never talked about the First World War, which he fought in, and my maternal grandfather. I knew he'd been in the army because he used to wear his medals on Armistice Day and things like that. And he'd been in the British Legion. But he never talked about the Second World War, the First World War. So, I also remember listening to the wireless, as we called it in those days, with my father and mother, and we were all in the front room, when Mr. Chamberlain, the Prime Minister, came back, and he flew into Norfolk, and he said, "I've got in my hand a piece of paper, peace in our time." I can remember that quite well. And my mother saying, "Oh, that's good," she said. "We won't be going to war." Because at that stage, my eldest brother was in the Territorial Army. He had wanted, well, in fact, he had joined the fascists, the black shirts in Acton. I remember he came home, he was about 16, and he came home and he had this black shirt uniform on and a little black hat, and my father knocked the daylights out of him. I can remember that. He really went, and I again didn't realise what it was all about, except that Dennis had joined the black shirts, and my father had sorted him out. I suppose it was the attraction of the uniform, I don't know, because none of us had any, you know, political things. We were much too young. So subsequently, Dennis then joined the Territorial Army in 1937, and there was a Territorial Guild Hall in Acton, and that's where he joined up there and enlisted. And I can remember in 1938, the crisis that we just mentioned, him being called up. And I think, I don't know where they went to, but he was called up with all the rest of the reserves and the Territorial Army. And of course, subsequently, he was discharged and disbanded, and he returned home. And he was working at the time at Acton Town Hall as a messenger boy. But he's still obviously in the TA. So my mother was quite happy that there was this question of, though he'd been called up, there was no question of him fighting, because Mr. Turing Chamberlain had got this peace in our time thing. And then I can also remember the abdication crisis with Edward VIII, and my father saying that he should never be king if he wants to marry that American woman who's already been married. And I can, you know, again, you know, you're young, you're growing up, you're not too sure of what's going on, but you, some of these things stick in your memory. And I can remember my father saying, you know, who wants a Queen of England that somebody else has slept with? And I didn't realise what it all meant. he wants to marry her, and he said he can't become king. And there was that, then of course he did abdicate, and George VI became king. That pleased my father as well. So all these things, within a space of a few years, 3 or 4 years, and then of course the war came. And
was there any discussion of the war or the impending war at school?
No. There's nothing, we were at school, I was at the county school by this time, you see, but they were talking about evacuation, going into the country, which my mother wouldn't let my sister and I go away, because when the war did come, of course, Dennis had already, as I said, he was in the Territorial Army, he'd already been called up anyway. My father was also in the Territorial Army, and he was called up. But he was called up in August 1939, so that just left Mum, Leslie and myself and my sister at home. Then, of course, subsequently, Leslie, he joined up as well.
Stan Hancock's Reel 2.